So more and more in society, we're seeing a trend of people not wanting to take responsibility for their lives. And we see a dramatic increase in people who are victims and thus justified to be rebellious against their parents, schools, the church, God, and any authority figure that happens to be available. They're going to be rebellious because they're absolutely justified in not being able to take, in that nothing is their fault. Many people are looking for answers for why their life isn't the way they want it. They look everywhere, anywhere for those answers, except for in the mirror where the real problem exists. Studies have shown just how biased we are of the accuracy of our own opinions. We are right, they are wrong. The truth is, we all know this, if we really are honest with anyone, we're not as correct as we think we are. Problem is, and this is just not anyone here particularly, this is a society problem. We're just too arrogant to admit it when we're wrong. Twice each year, as part of members of the church, we're asked purposefully to examine ourselves, be convicted of our transgressions, put sin out of our lives, and be reconciled to God. Now, this is something we should do every year, every day of the year, is look at this way. But God particularly knows that if he doesn't have two specific times a year, Passover and Atonement, that we're not going to really be purposeful in doing this. We tend to start backsliding a little bit. The first time of the year, of course, Passover, and then about halfway through the year is Atonement. We talked about that. Presently, we look through those times of the year, Passover, Atonement. We're about, I don't know, I'm not saying exactly halfway, but we're somewhere in between right now, those two points. So it's a good time right now to do what I call a pulse check. How are we doing? We're halfway between the two points. Are we moving in the right direction? Once finding sin, admitting our faults, and admitting the problem is the person in the mirror, which isn't always the easy thing to do, we're both our own greatest critics and our best enablers too. No one likes being told they're wrong. None of us like being told we're wrong. It tends to be a little tough. As we said before, studies have shown that when you have empirical evidence, data showing, no, actually you're wrong in this particular case, people will still hold that they're right. There's studies that go into this. It's absolutely amazing how people will absolutely want to be proven right and what they're doing is right. Don't tell me I'm wrong. What I'm doing isn't correct. I don't need to fix anything. So many of you have heard about or heard the term, especially if you've worked at any point in time, accountability. Accountability is a term. It's become really a corporate term because, you know, I'm sure some people make corporate circuits speaking about this topic. But it really is an important term. And the idea of being accountable is really a godly term. It's a godly idea. The definition of accountability is the following. The quality or state of being accountable, especially an obligation or willingness to accept, here's a key word, accept responsibility and to account for one's own actions. I'm responsible. I should have done it differently. The team didn't perform because of me if I'm the leader, right? That's the way it should be. Instead of saying, it's their fault. We see right now the debt ceiling was recently raised. And before the debt ceiling was raised, what was going on? It's a lot of this, right? A lot of pointing the other way. It's always the other person's fault. And I had recently talked to someone, they said, well, you ever thought about the debt ceiling argument that was happening? Everyone voted to pass the budget and spend the money, but no one wanted to figure out how we're actually going to write the checks for it. But let's spend the money. So everyone voted for that piece, and then all of a sudden we're going to argue about the debt ceiling. It's a funny thing that goes on in our country, but that's politics. Politics, the people who are supposed to be the leaders of our society, tend to be the least accountable day in, day out. And of course, this trickles into other parts of society. It permeates everywhere. Businesses, churches, and many other organizations throw around this term, accountability, and being accountable. What does it mean, and how can we be more accountable towards God for our lives and our actions? That's part of it. We're going to talk about that today. So today I'm going to be talking about the accountability ladder, and how our attitudes and behaviors towards our personal and professional lives are affected by how we take responsibility for our actions. The title is Climbing the Accountability Ladder Towards God. Nolan has some handouts that he's going to hand out. I didn't replenish the stock after my sermon last week in Kalamazoo. So what we'll do is ask you just to share some, if you don't mind, or if you're able to take a picture of it and keep it on your phone and look at it throughout the sermon, go ahead. But he'll pass out one, and then we'll go from there, and you can pass on your copy. Great, but I can always email copies to everyone. But please share them if you can. Again, take a picture on your phone, even better. So the accountability ladder helps us to understand the reason behind why we may not be achieving the results we would like in our personal, professional, and most importantly, our spiritual lives, our relationship with God. How are we doing? How's things going in that area? The ladder describes 8 levels of accountability that allows us to step back and really look at the choices we make, how we've handled them, how we handle these different situations, which ultimately make goal setting and achievement easier. Top 4 rungs of the ladder, if you look at it. Everyone's looked at it up to this point. I know Nolan's getting around to the end there. So the top 4 rungs are accountable behaviors. The top 4 rungs are accountable behaviors. Things such as we see on here. You're making it happen, finding a solution, owning it, and acknowledging reality. So those are the top 4 rungs. Things that, because of you, happen. Things happen because of me. Now the bottom 4 rungs here describe victim behaviors. Things happen to me. Things are always happening to me. I'm the problem. Or I'm not the problem, they're the problem. We all know people like this, that everyone always, you run into some people and life is just always a problem for them. The more time you spend towards the top of the ladder, the more opportunities you can open up for yourself at home, at work, church, for God to work with you to help achieve those goals that you want. The more time you spend at the bottom of the ladder, the more you'll lament the things that you haven't achieved and will continually be stuck in what we call a rut. So here's a story. This isn't about one individual, one person here, so don't think I've made it up for one person here. So a boy wakes up for school and heads to the table for breakfast. His dad notices he's looking a little anxious and asks, "What's bothering you, son?" The boy states, "Well, I'm supposed to turn in my homework today and I haven't done it." The dad asks, "Why not?" The boy says, "I didn't know I needed to." If you look at the ladder, it says not aware on the ladder. So that's the bottom rung. He wasn't aware. The dad asked, "Why didn't you know you were supposed to hand in your homework today?" The boy replies, "My teacher didn't remind me it was due today." Blaming others, an excellent rung on the ladder here. The dad states, "It sounds like you're aware of it needing to be done today, regardless of your teacher not reminding you." The boy replies, "Well, the weather's been good, and like you said, I should get outside and get some fresh air." So I did. I ran out of time to get my homework done before bedtime. So now we go to excuses on the ladder, if you see there, 3rd rung. The dad says, "It sounds like you didn't want to get your homework done, and now you're in a pickle." The boy replies, "You're probably right, but I don't think any of the other kids got their homework done either, so I bet the teacher will give us another day to get it done." And that is wait and hope, the 4th rung. So there's our 4 bottom rungs of the ladder. And it reminds me of times, maybe I might have made some of these excuses. Maybe this was about me when I was a middle schooler. But this is a common theme in a lot of things in life, though. You hear these kind of same things. And it just walks through the progression. So I'd like you to remember the story as we're going through it. Just kind of helps you think about it and relate to it. But also think about how you're taking inventory of your own life and how you rate on the ladder. So where am I at? Am I when something goes on that's not in a good place in my life, you know, something bad happens in my life, is the first place I look at other people and say, boy, if they would have done that differently, Or is it if I would have just been more prepared or got something done? So that's part of it. Rung number one on the ladder is I'm unaware or unconscious of what's going on. Just don't know. Mr. Armstrong used to say, you don't know that you don't know. You think about the don't knows a little bit, but it's true. Sometimes you don't know that you don't know that you don't know, meaning you're completely unaware of the matter. So these are people who are not even aware of the problem, or there may even be the problem. I mean, they're willingly ignorant and almost happy at this point because everything's just, I'm not the problem. Obviously, everybody else is. An example is someone with poor hygiene has no clue about the fact that they have poor hygiene. In fact, they smell like a rose. In their mind, they think everything's just fine. Not a problem. Other people can smell their odor or notice it, but they have zero clue that they stink. Walking around stinking, no one has told them yet. This would be the unaware, unconscious level. And this goes back to when I was in the dorm last year at Camp Katubik as the B5 boys dorm counselor. And some of the boys, they get done working, sweating. I would make a very general statement, not isolating anyone. Make sure you're putting your deodorant on because you stink. But, an example of this is, I remember, and you think, some people, how can you be this unaware? But it happens. I was working at a company, and I was managing the recruiting process for them. And I had an intern that was assigned to me, reported to someone else. All the interns reported as one person, but they were assigned to different people. And this person was assigned to me. And they had just the worst clothes on when they did work for us. I mean, they'd have a sweatshirt that had holes in it and shoes that had holes in them. Just didn't that look professional. The beard was not trim and cleaned up. The hair wasn't combed. Just looked like a mess. And finally, enough complaints came to me from the business clients like, hey, this person's representing us and looks horrible. We can't have this. And I said, okay, I went and checked the guy out, and sure enough, they're right. I went to his leader and I said, look, here's the issue. We're getting some complaints. If you can talk to him about how he dresses, that'd be great. Well, he never did, and the problem persisted. So I finally picked up the phone and called the young man and said, well, here's a conversation we need to have, and I'd like to make you aware of some things that have been said about your appearance. And I went through the whole process, and he was embarrassed. His statement was, I didn't know. He didn't know. Now, how then did he see the holes in his shoes and the problem with his clothes and his beard and when he looked in the mirror? And it wasn't like he wasn't getting paid well. This was a graduate intern on top of it, so he got paid pretty decent. And I reminded him that we hand out polos, company polos, every year, and you should have a few of them by now. You can wear it to our thing. So anyways, he got a little better after that, but he thanked me, though, and said, thank you. So he moved from there and quickly got to acknowledging reality on the top rung and moved through it. But this actually does happen. If you think, well, this doesn't happen, it does. I've seen it. But too often we, even God's people, choose to be ignorant and make a choice to be in the dark about something in our lives. Some other examples of this is, I didn't know the speed limit changed in this area, officer. How does that happen, right? Or I didn't realize that project at work was due today, boss. I didn't know the holy days are coming up. I haven't even unleavened my home yet. Snuck right up on me. And that's one of those things of the year that you just can't spiritually say, okay, I'll get ready last second spiritually, which is not possible, but it's not as easily possible. But physically, days of unleavened bread, it's something physically you actually have to do. You have to get your home clean. And if you put it off the last second, you're in rough shape trying to figure it all out on top of your spiritual preparedness. But this happens. Sometimes we're guilty of this. Who do we blame? Well, work has been so busy, I just haven't been able to get to it. Kids are running around all over the place, Little League starting, can't just do this, right? Happens. Or there's a person who routinely offends other people. What they say or their attitude, and because no one's ever come and told them as much, they continue to be rude, selfish, and hurtful to other people. There's people like this too. Just have to be told, hey, look, I know you like to tell the truth and you like to be blunt about your opinions. but you kind of step on toes when you do it. There's also the business owner doesn't know April 15th is coming up, needs to file their taxes, or the teenager, or the parent didn't know the teenager. This is serious, especially this time, right now with what's going on. Teenagers in your home doing drugs, having sex, keeping bad company, or in some cases right now, you don't even know that your teenager is severely depressed and suicidal. And if you don't think that's a problem, and I know you've heard some of my sermons on this topic before, it is a problem. And as a parent, that's something you got to be aware of. But overall, this person's always in a state of shock and surprise when they learn things. Leviticus 5:17. If a person sins and commits any of these things which are forbidden to be done by the commandments of the Lord, though he does not know it, he is guilty and shall bear his iniquity. Here God's saying, if you commit any of these sins, and goes through, and we know the sins that God's talking about. Here he says, if you ignorantly commit sin, you're still equally guilty of it. And that's why certain sacrifice had to be done. Even for the people who didn't know they'd committed a sin, still there needed to be a sacrifice for them. Cleanse them of their sins too. So this is part of it. God doesn't believe in, you know, being ignorant of your trespasses, or even if you are, there's still a price to pay. Galatians 6:3. Galatians 6:3 says, "For anyone thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself." If you think you're something when you are absolutely nothing, you deceive yourself. And sometimes you think, well, I'm perfect, or I'm really good place here, or whatever the issue is, you think this is what the way it is. But it says here, if you're nothing, you've deceived yourself. No one's deceived you. You've chose to be deceived because of a lack of self-awareness. And self-awareness is really the key here. And that's a whole nother sermon in itself, is self-awareness. But self-awareness is important. You got to go through the exercise of learning about how you operate, your personality, how you tick, how you make decisions. And it's sometimes a great process to go through. And people spend a lot of money on this, by the way, personality assessments and types and exercises. And I love them because it's really very helpful. And this is one of those things when you get through it and you realize, wow, I could see why I've upset a few people because of the way I like to make decisions in this way, or the way I get my work done this way. They like to get their work done in a very organized, methodical, structured way, and I'm over here kind of flying by the seat of my pants. Maybe that's why I'm upsetting this person. So self-awareness, right, is very important for this rung of the ladder. Rung number two, I blame and complain. I blame and complain. Here's the famous line, my dog ate my homework. And if Nolan ever said that Roscoe ate his homework, I'd actually believe him. Our dog Roscoe's a knucklehead. So he absolutely could eat your homework. But this is the blame and complain. It's always the other person's fault. Now I've been made aware, it's their fault. There's where the problem lies, the other person. There's a kid who always seems to think every teacher in the school is against them. Why is it every teacher hates my guts? Why is the teachers are always out to get me? It's always the problem, the teachers or other people. This person who can't have a good relationship with their family because of so-and-so, my parents or whoever. You know, some people say, my parents didn't love me. My parents didn't care about me. And certainly, these can create problems for people, right? They can create deep-seated problems, which is why you want to become aware of certain things that might be the problem. I'm aware that I have this problem because of the way I was raised in this way. That's an awareness thing, right? But it's not an excuse for continuing to commit crime or stepping on other people's toes and doing things that don't work. God calls us to be continuously improving, never staying the same. This is the process. This person may even blame the minister for their spiritual problems. That minister would just give better sermons on a week-to-week basis. I would do better. And I've actually heard that before from some people, blaming the minister because they're just not giving good meat on Sabbath. I need better meat on Sabbath. I've heard that one before. They're always shedding responsibility on someone. Let's look at Matthew 7. And trust me, sometimes the first place I want to look, I have to catch myself. Something goes wrong, I say, who can I blame to get out of this deal? And I was like, look, ah, wrong answer, Zach. Not the right way to do things. The guy in the mirror. And so that carnal nature we all have, sometimes is the first instinctual thing, is to blame. Be aware of that, though. Matthew 7, verse 3. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye and look at the plank in your own eye? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly remove the speck from your brother's eye. Something that Christ is talking about. Obviously, this is not anything that's developed as part of the recent corporate culture since the 1950s or something like this. Accountability has been a problem for human beings. It's our natural instinct to want to blame other people. God's seen it. Jesus Christ is talking about it here. Quit saying, hey, look at that guy. Like, hey, no, look in the mirror, bud. You got some problems, too, you need to start addressing. And that's part of it, too, if we have to look at that. Numbers 11:1. Again, we're talking about blaming others here. And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, for the Lord heard it, and his anger was aroused. So the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. Then the people cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire was quenched. We look at here, the blaming of others. Moses was always blamed by the people. You can read through it from the time that they were leaving Egypt, and they're caught against Red Sea and the Egyptian armies coming down upon them. What did they do? Why did you lead us here to die, Moses? And they blamed him. They're quick to blame Moses and everything. Ran out of water, what did they do? Blame Moses. Ran out of food, blame Moses. Blame, blame, blame. Never did they say, well, why is God, what is he doing? What is he trying to do here for us? What do we got to learn from this experience? It was always, Moses guy was always the problem. And God finally had enough of it. He got tired of it. Which leads us to the next rung of the ladder. I make excuses. God's not one to hear excuses. Doesn't want to hear it. Gets tired of it. Matter of fact, he was up to the point where he was ready to wipe him out. More than once, Moses walked God back from the brink of this, of consuming Israel. So this is a person, when they may start making excuses, rung three, always seems to be having a bad day. I work for someone like this. This lady always was having a bad day. And just wore you out, actually, being around this person. Just wore you out. Wasn't able to get to work because her car broke down. They would have had the project done on time, but their computer mysteriously crashed. Said, I would go back to school if I finished my degree, but I'm too old now. They say things like, some people are meant to be winners and others losers. Or, this is the one I remember hearing one time from a guy who lost a big national radio show, and I said, well, hey, why isn't this radio show still on at noon anymore? And he says, well, sometimes, Zach, you're the pigeon, and sometimes you're the statue. Let that visual play in your mind a little bit, but that was what he told me. They didn't see it coming, that there was national contracts and issues with miles and stuff like that. No way they could have saw that one coming. But that was what he told me. You hear them say all the time, I could be successful if. Big word, if. These people have a bad case of the ifs. And I remember in college, a teacher, one time we were just saying ifs and ifs, and this one professor, and he said, well, you can if yourself in any situation you want. He was absolutely right. Genesis 3. Genesis 3, verse 12. Then the man said, the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree and I ate it. So it's the woman's fault. That's an easy one. You know, as a man, I like that one. That's a good one. We'll work with that one. And the Lord God said to the woman, "What is it you have done?" The woman said, "The serpent deceived me and I ate." Did God buy those excuses? Did those work for him? They say, "Oh, I get it. I understand, Adam. She deceived you." And then, you know, she went and said, "Hey, you know, that serpent deceived me." He said, "I get it. I understand. Hey, look, I've almost been there a few times myself. You know, hey, go ahead, guys. You can stay in the garden. Not a problem." Now he said, "You're out. One and done. I warned you." So God, again, as we know the rest of that story, does not take the excuses very kindly. We'll hear another story here, 1 Samuel 15. Verse 1. Samuel also said to Saul, "The Lord sent me to anoint you king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore heed the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he ambushed him on the way when they came up from Egypt. Now go and attack Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have, and do not spare them, but kill both man and woman, infant and nursing child, ox and sheep, camel and donkey." So Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men of Judah. So from here, we know that this Amalek, the people here, if you remember the story, they came up, and it wasn't just they attacked Israel's army, they actually attacked the elderly, the infirmed, the people who couldn't keep up with Israel. They literally ambushed them, attacked them, and it was an absolute nasty thing that they did. It was not proper. And God didn't forget it, by the way. God doesn't forget these things. He didn't forget it here. He said, finally, it's time for justice. Justice is to be served. The other problem with this particular thing, and of course the Bible has some tact and diplomacy to it, they don't get in and talk about what all these countries absolutely do. Now, it could be one thing where Israel just came in and just wiped out the armies and took over, but let them exist. Generally, there's cultural problems here. Anytime God said utterly destroy the whole thing, there's cultural problems. He has a reason for it. He's infinitely wiser than us, and he knows that even it's harsh to kill the children, but there's always going to be a problem with the culture permeating back into Israel or other places. And that's why. He had very good reasons for it. Hopefully Saul listened, but we're going to find out. Verse 7. Saul attacked Amalekites from Havilah all the way to Shur, which is east of Egypt. He also took Agag, king of Amalekites, alive and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were unwilling to utterly destroy them, but everything despised and worthless that they utterly destroyed. So here we are. Anything that was good, anything that had value, we kept. Anything that we don't really like those things, we got rid of and said, "Oh boy, we checked the box. God wants us to destroy things. We did it." Nope. Now the word of the Lord came to Samuel saying, "I greatly regret." Those are words you never want to hear God say in regards to you. "I greatly regret that I have set up Saul as king, for he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandments." And it grieved Samuel, and he cried out to the Lord all night. So when Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, he was told Samuel, "Saul went to Carmel, and indeed he set up a monument for himself, and he has gone on around, passed by, and gone to Gilgal." Then Samuel went to Saul, and Saul said to him, "Blessed are you of the Lord. I have performed the commandments of the Lord." Now where's Saul on the accountability ladder right now? Appears to be not aware, be a little unconscious of the issue that he's created for himself and his people. God and Samuel are about to see to it. That's going to change. But Samuel said, verse 14, "What then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears, and the lowing of the oxen, which I hear. And Saul said, they have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. And he's making what we would say is excuses here, right? He's on the ladder, and you can move up and down the ladder a few different places. But now he's making an excuse like, hey, look what we've done. Isn't this great? Isn't this a positive thing? I'm glad you noticed that the sheep were bleeding because we've kept the best for God. And Samuel said to Saul, be quiet, and I will let you know what the Lord said to me last night. And at that point, I think Saul understood the other shoe was about to drop. It says here, and Saul said, and he said to him, speak on. Verse 17, so Samuel said, when you were little in your own eyes, were you not head of the tribe of Israel? And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said to Samuel, but I have obeyed the voice of the Lord and gone on the mission on which the Lord sent me and brought back Agag, king of Amalek. I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people, verse 21, but the people took of the plunder, the sheep, and the oxen, the best of things which should have been utterly destroyed to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal. Here he is, blaming others. Saul, blaming others. The people did it. They're the ones that took it. Now who's king? Who's the leader here? Saul, you're the king. Again, God's just not going to accept this. He's not going to accept this excuse. Verse 22, so Samuel said, has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed the fat of the rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and adultery. Those are some pretty big things. Stubbornness and rebellious attitude here got Samuel saying that God looks at them with witchcraft and idolatry. That's pretty serious. If you've never thought about that, you know, I think, boy, witchcraft and idolatry have to be way up here compared to rebelliousness, you know, being hard-headed, stubborn. My God, it's pretty even in my book. Keeps going on here. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he also has rejected you from being king. Very harsh. Verse 24. Then Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord in your words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. He's finally starting to get closer here. He says, I have sinned, but it was because, you know, I feared them. I didn't know what they're going to do to me. Verse 25, now therefore, please pardon my sin and return with me that I may worship the Lord. Now he's hoping. He's saying, oh boy, I hope God's going to change his mind. This is pretty serious. Verse 26, but Samuel said to God, I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you from being king over Israel. So quite often, we struggle to understand the difference between King David and King Saul. Here's the very great example of this. King David, when he was confronted with the sin of Bathsheba and then having her husband basically murdered at the front of the lines, when he finally was confronted, what was David's response? Wasn't an excuse. Well, you know, if she didn't change so close to me and wasn't naked and, you know, bathing in front of me so within eyeshot, I wouldn't have, you know, lusted after her, God, you know? And if her husband would have just listened to me and went home with her that night, you know, it wasn't that. He said, I have sinned, was his statement. It wasn't anyone excuses. He took 100% accountability immediately. Where here, Saul argued with Samuel. Samuel's a prophet here, giving, hey, this is the word of God. This is what happened. Instantly argued. Because at that point, God laid out everything with the sin of Bathsheba. Yeah, here's what's going to happen. Here's all the things going to happen to you now. God had made his mind up. But when he repented instantly and God knew his heart, he He took it easy on them. That's the difference, the heart. It's a matter of heart in these things. When you are confronted with something on this ladder, if your heart's in the right place, God's going to work with you. And he worked with David. Rung number four, I wait in hope. I wait in hope. So you hear this person say, someday I'll do that. One of these times, things are going to get better. I just know it. You may mistake this person for being an optimist, by the way. They talk that way. One of these days, it's going to get better. Because they have a lot of hope. But as time goes on, you begin to observe their ship just never comes in. And it's always waiting on the other side of the horizon. Famous line Christians use is, God's going to take care of it for me. And certainly, he's going to help you take care of things. That's not to say that your faith doesn't matter. Your faith matters. But what do we know? Faith without works. You got to have the works. You got to be doing something. You got to be moving forward. And then God's going to bless your efforts. One of the things I'd heard one time sermon was, is sometimes you're praying and you're just not getting an answer. You know, the answer's not coming. And it might be because God's saying, I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm just going to bless you whatever you decide to do. I'm going to bless that effort. But I want you to work through, make the decision. You own the decision that you're going to make here. But I'm going to bless your efforts and the next step along the way, like I have already in your life. That was like, wow, that would open up like, wow, that's a new way of looking at it, because I start getting a little frustrated at some moments. Like, why isn't it abundantly clear what I do next? Well, God's not going to tell you what to do. So that was also part of it. Proverbs 13:4. Proverbs 13:4, the soul of the lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. So the soul of the lazy man desires and has nothing. This is the part of it. The lazy man always has hope, always has a desire for things to change. Things are always going to get better. I just know it. But you never really see him doing anything to fix it. You know, I know one day my economic status and my life's going to change, but they never go back to school. They never read a book. They never do anything to improve themselves and get better. They're always in this state of things are going to get better, but they never do anything about it. And that's part of it. But it says the soul of the diligent, the person who disciplines themselves, does little things, continues to want to get better, will be made rich. So that's the first four rungs, the victim behaviors. Now let's start taking a look at what we call accountable behaviors, things that happen because of you. And of course, because God has blessed you and worked with you. But that's kind of the moving above the line. By the way, the first time I had heard of this accountability ladder was I was at a meeting very early in my career, and several leaders who were older than me were in a room, and they couldn't make a decision. They were having problems, and there's a bit of blaming going on why the program wasn't working. And one of them said, well, I think we're at the first rung of the accountability ladder. And so that's when it got me looking into this over the years. It's a very true thing. So rung number five on here is we acknowledge reality. We acknowledge reality. This person tends to be brutally honest with themselves and others. They don't blame or complain. They tell the truth. They read and listen to books and articles recommended by their boss, such as How to Win Friends and Influence People, because they are the workplace jerk. And as they're reading the book, they realize they are the problem in their relationships with others. They begin to realize they were willingly ignorant of the truth around them. Their teachers didn't actually hate them, and that they were just rebellious and insolent. They would have kept their car's maintenance up if they would have, and it wouldn't have broken down. They recognize they had been waiting on people and circumstances to change around them when they had the power the whole time to make the changes they desired. These people are literally waking up for the first time to their own issues and acknowledging it, and the blinders are falling off. This is a major first step for for anyone's ever went through a process and you become aware of a problem, it's a big first step. So let's look at Psalms 51:3. And this is, I've talked about awareness, but this step here is about awareness. This is you becoming aware of where you need to improve. Spiritually, professionally, physically, whatever it is, this is you becoming aware. And David wrote here, "For I acknowledge my transgressions, and my sins are always before me. Against you and you only have I sinned and done this evil in your sight, that you may be found just when you speak and blameless when you judge." This is his reaction to Bathsheba. We talk about this, but this is a different tone. You read this tone as someone who's been made aware of the problem, they've accepted that, and they're saying, "I am the problem here." They're looking within themselves. Proverbs 28:13. "He who covers his sins will not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes them will have mercy." So you can't cover your sins and get better, in other words. You can't say, "Hey, you know, now I've learned this about myself. I've learned that I'm the problem. I'm just going to kind of bury it over here and hope no one notices it." Doesn't work. It's always going to be there. It's always still going to be the problem. You can't cover the matter and hope that things will improve. But whoever confesses it, says, confesses it, as David did, you read that, and forsakes them, which is repentance, will have, what is it? Mercy. And that's what exactly happened to David. If you read through the rest of that psalm and you read through his story, God shows mercy. God's love and his grace for us extends way further than we can ever imagine. But we first have to be willing to say, "Hey, I'm the problem. God, help me with this. Help me not to have these problems. Repent of it. He'll be there." James 4:17. "Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin." And I just was reading some, I just saw it when I was on a website, some ancient Chinese proverbs recently, and one of them is very similar to this. It's a concept that if you know to do something that's good, you should be doing it. And this is it. "Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, him it is sin." You sinned against your conscience. Your conscience is going to beat you up if you knew you should have done it and you didn't do it. It's a sin to you. Your conscience is going to bother you and beat you up. So remember, if you know to do good, if you know which one of the things to do good is to improve, then do it. Job 13:23. Moved in my Bible. All right, Job 13:23. "How many are my iniquities and sins? Make me know my transgression and my sin." Job, going through quite a trial, wants to know, "How many are my iniquities and sins? Make me know my transgressions." He wanted to know, why am I going through this? And a really good question is always to ask that question. When you're faced with a trial in your life, And it's, no one likes it. I don't enjoy it. You have to find a way to enjoy it. And the way you find the way to enjoy it is to ask the question, why am I going through this? And when you finally get to that point where you're saying why, and you start getting the answers, and you start figuring out how you can work on it, the joy comes with it. But just to sit and just be miserable, there's no enjoyment in being miserable. It's the process of working through it. But this person who begins to acknowledge reality may begin to exhibit depressive behaviors because they are beating themselves up for missed opportunities or the damage they've inflicted on others. So think about the convict who becomes converted in prison. If you're sitting in prison and you get some church booklets and you start reading them and you become fully aware of the problems you've committed and you're the problem, well, this could be a really tough place to be. But God doesn't want us staying here, which is why we moved to the rung number 6. I own it. It's one thing to acknowledge it, that you're a problem, you have things that need to be worked on, but to stay here is a problem. Don't stay at this rung. Move on to number 6, which is I own it. I'm going to do something about it. And that's empowerment. Now you've acknowledged the reality of the situation. We then get to decide if we're going to fall back down the ladder and make excuses like blame and complain. It's quite easy once you become aware to blame and complain. Or if we're going to take ownership of the problem, we move forward in creating the solutions. This person at this stage gets excited because they realize the power to make change is within themselves. And with the help of God, they can begin to own the reality that they just realized. Yes, they have acknowledged the issues, but it's their issue. And they will begin to seek change. And this is a powerful thing here. We look at 2 Corinthians 5:10. 2 Corinthians 5:10. God is not one for people getting beat up and sitting there wallowing in their sins and being reminded of their sins. When we're forgiven, our sins are cast as far as east is from west. It's pretty far. Does not want us sitting there getting beat up over and each other doing it to people who are getting better. We have to acknowledge that we don't do it to each other either. 2 Corinthians 5:10, for we all must appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. And again, we have a lot of scriptures on works. One of them says that, you know, God doesn't believe in being judged on what you've done. He hasn't read enough of this. Obviously, we're asked to do things. We're asked to make changes. We're asked to become better. But we move to number seven on the rung. Number 7 is I seek solutions. Now you've owned it. I'm the problem, working through it. Now we go to number 7, which is you seek solutions. Either you're green or growing, you're ripe and rotting. You ever heard that saying? Green, growing, or ripe and rotting. That's a good way of thinking of it. Never want to be the fruit on the vine that stopped growing, because what happens to happen? You get picked. You want to keep growing. You want to be green. You want to be growing. You want to be getting better, improving continuously. It's part of it. It'd be easy to stay on the ownership rung and to say, hey, I own it. And you walk around with your chest puffed up. Yeah, I'm the problem around here. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to get better. But what are you actually doing about it? At this rung, you begin to read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, not because it was assigned reading to you by your boss. Like, I got to get this person in reality here. They're the problem. But because you actually want to learn and fix the problems. You want to do this. Or you read the book, Think and Grow Rich, figure out how to become more successful in life. Or you seek out others who you know to be successful and ask questions about how they became successful or overcame a similar problem. You seek out mentors, advisors, people like this. You continuously want to get better. These are things you want to do. I was listening to a tape, a guy named Jim Rohn, R-O-H-N, and he's one of these success gurus and talks about different things. It's one of the most impactful guys I've ever listened to because he's big on accountability and doing something about what you learn. One of the things he that never would know this, and he's passed on now, but he shamed me into getting a library card. He made the point one time, he says, you know, library cards are free. What percentage of the population actually has one? And I realized I didn't have one. So what did I do? I happened to be in a position, I went right away and got one, and got a book and started getting self-development books and improving my library and buying books and making a point to read and have things I had to be accountable about. One of which was I didn't like getting up in the morning. So I made sure I was getting up in the morning at early, made a cup of coffee, which I like coffee, some of you may know that, good coffee. Made a cup of coffee, good coffee, and I'd get a development book and I would read it for 20 minutes and I'd start developing the behaviors of self-improvement, reading books, getting up early, little disciplines. And I can't tell you how much better I felt about myself. That turns into more positive energy that takes on bigger, more problems. This is something that everybody can work on. If I could fix a few things I know I needed to fix about myself, this is a pretty easy step to go through here. Psalms 139th Psalm. Verse 23, Psalm 139, verse 23, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties, and see if there's any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. I think it's a good attitude here, is that, you know, the wanting to be searched, try me, God, know me. Is there anything wicked way in me? And lead me, God, show me the way. It's a good attitude. David had, when God said, you know, he had a heart, you know, after me, this was, you know, you read this, just, it's there. You can see it coming out in the words. A very positive, beautiful thing. Matthew 7:7. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks, it will be open. Now, if you're an attorney, and if Jesus was an attorney, he would, you know, want to leave himself some wiggle room. He would say, and he who knocks, it may be opened. If you have read the contracts, it says will here. It means it's going to happen. Yeah, or shall. Shall's the other one. Will or shall. Depends how you like your old English. But it doesn't say may, does it? It's a promise. It's going to happen. But you have some things you have to do. You first have to seek. That's what we're talking about here in this rung. I seek solutions. I've got to get up and do something about it. I can't sit and wait and hope things are going to change. I have to figure out, how do I get better in this area of my life? Whatever it may be, I have to own it and work on it. And if I seek it, I'm going to find, it says. If you knock, it'll be opened. This is something that God is saying, if we do it, here's what's going to happen. This is the result. So I think this is something we can all take actual hope in, that if we do things, we seek solutions, we're going to find them. Rung number 8, last rung. I make it happen. Rung number 8, I make it happen. This is the best stage. Up until now, you've acknowledged reality and your transgressions. You know it's your responsibility to take ownership of your behavior. You sought solutions and prayed for answers. Now you're ready to be a doer, not just a hearer. James wrote in chapter 1, verse 22, but be doers of the word, not just hearers, only deceiving yourselves. If you've heard it, you know it, you're seeking it, now we're doing something about it. Those poor relationships now begin to repair themselves. Your poor performance at work improves. Magically? No, on purpose. Now you begin to apply the new knowledge and behaviors and become a model employee. Your relationship with God improves and a new peace comes over you. And I can tell you here recently, I've had to work through this. I had an issue with a leader. And kept coming back up. about every 6 months, the same issue with this particular leader kept coming up. This is the problem I continuously had. And frankly, I was tired of it. So I talked to an elder. He said, well, have you fasted about it? No, I haven't. Why don't you fast about it? So I fasted about it, asked him to pray, and he prayed, and I prayed about it. And, you know, not magically, on purpose, things began to get better because I saw a few things I needed to make changes in. I had to look in the mirror and some things I could fix in this situation. Instead of waiting and hoping this person became a better leader, which I also prayed about, and I've seen changes in their way of leading too, by the way. I got better, they got better, we both got better, and our relationship got better. But it took doing something about it. No longer could I sit in the bottom rungs of this ladder waiting and hoping, making excuses and blaming this person. I had to do something about it, but it took me fasting about it, praying about it, asking and seeking counsel on the matter, and things got better. And I have to continuously work at it. James 2. James 2, verse 14. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith and does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, but what does it profit? Thus also, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. Works, doing, taking action, following through. It's all part of it. We know there's people who can spout out every word of the Bible. They have it memorized, know it. And you just see sometimes their life just has certain problems. And you think, well, why is it? Because it's not translating into their actions of their life. It's not how they live. It's part of it here. It's how we do things. God is about action. Ecclesiastes 9:10. Ecclesiastes 9:10. Solomon writing, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or device, knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you're going. Don't just do it, by the way, and walk through the motions. All right, they said to do this, and you walk like a robot, and you go do it. Like, no, do it with gusto, with energy, with passion. Do it with all the might, not just 50%. Hey, good enough for now. Good enough for who it's for. A joke that sometimes my dad and I will have when we're doing some projects around each other's home. Wow, it's good enough for who it's for. That's not right. It's not the way God wants it. God wants us going 100% all the time, to the best of our ability. So Gandhi famously said, be the change that you wish to see in the world. Be the change you wish to see in the world. And if each one of us takes more accountability for ourselves, for what we're doing, improving ourselves, getting better, improving the relationships because we're doing something different, things will start getting better in all aspects of our lives all the time. What most people call luck is merely preparation and opportunity meeting at the same time. If you've prepared, you know your subject matter well, and you've decided that I'm going to show up for the meeting or the event, things work out. This happens all the time. If you've done your work, you've prepared, and you know certain people are going to be there, you need to go talk to, and they happen to be there, that's not luck. You've done what you're supposed to do. So I hope you'll use this ladder to take account for your shortcomings and those pesky sins that keep coming back into your life, and sometimes the things that keep coming back out of the baptismal grave. Instead of being a victim, become a person who is accountable for what happens in your life. Start at rung number 5. And acknowledge you are flesh and blood and will make mistakes, and those mistakes are your own fault, which Wrong number six, take those mistakes and seek solutions to them so you can overcome the mistakes. Then rung number seven, finally take action on what you know and begin to fix your mistakes, which is rung number eight. Brethren, don't be helpless victims and become people who actively improve our lives and relationships every day.